Hello, welcome to Universal Soul Love. This is Detective David Love.
And this is Dr. Lana Love.
Welcome to our show. Today we have Dr. Bruce Lipton with us today as a special guest. Hello,
Hello.
Bruce. How
Hello.
are you?
Anxious to be here. We got good stuff to talk about.
Absolutely. So glad to have you on our show. Thanks so much for offering to come on our show on Universal Soul Love with us.
Well, I'm so happy to be here because anybody who's listening is by definition a cultural creative looking for new answers in a time when we need them. So I'm glad they're all here.
Bruce, we are so excited to have you on our show. Bruce, of course, is the renowned cell biologist who's written the book The Biology of Belief, Unleashing the Power of Consciousness, Matter, and Miracle. And I'm absolutely thrilled because I'm a medical doctor, and as well, I'm a very much into Buddhism, spirituality, and of course, you are the person who really, I guess, one of the founders who introduced the idea of matter and mind being connected, matter and spirit.
But it's interesting because the mind part has been accepted for nearly 100 years, but neglected totally. I mean, they only want to talk about it when it comes up to the word placebo. And we define placebo as a healing based on a belief, and then it all disappears after that. And it's like, yeah, but all healing is essentially based on belief, so you better have that as a foundational thing and not just put it aside as a little, a little thing on the side. No, the placebo, and more importantly, which people don't understand, is the influence of the nocebo. I mean, placebo is, oh yeah, positive thinking that this sugar pill, or, well, they didn't know it was a sugar pill, this pill or this therapy was going to heal them, and then find out it was a sugar pill or a fake therapy of some kind, but the healing resulted not from the therapy but from the belief. And so they say, yeah, that's a placebo. And then I go, what we've left out, and it's more important, is that the placebo is based on a positive belief. The question is, does negative belief have an impact? And the answer is yes, equally powerful to the positive belief. And we don't count it, but the reality is a negative belief can actually cause any illness, including cancer, and a negative belief can kill you. And so we only talk about the role of positive belief, and I go, yeah, but since most people, 70% of their thoughts are negative, we have to recognize those are not just passing thoughts. Those negative thoughts are turned into biology and behavior. And therefore,
it's quite frightening, isn't it?
Well, it you need to have this awareness, because if you think, oh, I'm just having a negative thought, it's irrelevant. It's like, no, every negative thought is turned into biology. And by definition, a negative thought is not going to be a healthy biology. This is a fact.
Wow. Could you tell us a bit more about how thoughts are turned into biology and how negative thought impacts on biology? How did you come to find that?
It's kind of fun because everyone says mind, body, and then they all go like, oh, it's all miracles and magic. It's like, it's absolutely physical, chemical, mind, body. And it works very simply this. My experiments, which changed my career back in 1970, I was growing stem cells, which are embryonic cells. And I would clone a stem cell. And that means I'd put one stem cell in a petri dish by itself. It would divide every 10 or 12 hours. So first there's one, then two, four, eight, 16. The cell population doubles and doubles. And after a week, I end up with about 50,000 cells in the petri dish. But the important part is that's 50,000 genetically identical cells because they all came from the same parent. Now I split the cells into three petri dishes. So I had three different petri dishes with genetically identical cells in each dish. But I changed the environment a little bit. And when, as a cell biologist, when I talk about environment, I'm talking about culture medium. I changed the chemistry. I said, well, what is culture medium? And I go, well, you go to the animal you get the cells from. So if I'm going to, if I'm working with mouse cells, I go to the mouse and I look at its blood and the composition of the blood and try to make a synthetic version. If I grow human cells, then I look at the composition of human blood and try to make a synthetic version. Point is simple. Culture medium is our synthetic version of blood. Now, what I did is I changed the chemical composition of the culture medium a little bit in the three dishes. So I have genetically identical cells, but by definition, three different environments because I've changed the chemistry of the culture medium. And I said, well, what was the result? And the answer is this. In one dish, the cells form muscle. In a second dish, the cells form bone. And in a third dish, the cells form fat cells. But then the most important question is, well, what controls the fate of the cells? Well, we always said genetics controlled it. But the problem is this. All three dishes had genetically identical cells. So the fate of the cell was not determined by the genes. They all had the same genes. It was determined by the cell's response to the environment. I go, yeah, but what environment? I say, well, the blood, the culture medium, the composition. I go, inside your body, here's a joke in some sense, is that we look in the mirror and see ourselves as single individuals. But the truth is, every one of us is made out of about 50 trillion cells. The cells are the living entity. The human, by definition, is a community of cells. Okay? So that's basically what it is. And I say, well, a way of looking at it is this. A human being is a skin-covered petri dish with 50 trillion cells inside. And we have culture medium called blood. And the point is very simply this. The fate of the cells is not determined by the genes. It's determined by the chemistry of the environment, which is the blood. Okay, now we're left down to, okay, so the genes didn't make a decision. They're just responding to the signals, the chemicals of the environment. Now here comes the next important part. I said, well, what body organ controls the chemistry of the blood? I go, the brain. The brain is the chemist. But then I go, yeah, but there's so many different kinds of chemicals that can be released by a brain. Which chemicals are released? And then comes the last and most important part. The mind is the interpretation of the world. And the brain takes that interpretation and turns it into chemistry and sends it to the body. And the body responds to our thoughts via the chemistry. Change your thoughts, you change the chemistry. I'll give you a simple example. If you are sitting there with your eyes closed, and then you open your eyes and you see someone you love in front of you, the mind interpreting love will cause the brain to release chemistry associated with love, such as dopamine, which is pleasure, and oxytocin, which is bonding, and growth hormone. When people experience love, they release growth hormone, which is what? A hormone that supports the growth of the body. And that's why it's simple. The culture medium called blood, in a person that's in love, contains elements such as growth hormone, which enhance the health of the body. And that's why when people fall in love, they look so healthy. Or people say, oh, look how that couple glows. They're in love. And what they're saying is, look at the health of these people. I go, yeah, the health of the individual is related to the chemistry of the blood. In love, the chemistry of the blood supports the health of the cells. And now, same person closes their eyes, but when they open them this time, they see something that scares them. I go, oh, well, and when the mind sees something that stresses them, fear, it doesn't release love chemicals, it releases stress chemicals, such as cortisol, inflammatory agents. I said, well, that changes the chemicals in the culture medium, the blood. And I go, yeah, the culture medium is now different. And I remember, go back to the experiment. The signals in the culture medium determine the fate of the cells. If you put stress chemicals in the blood because of a fear in your mind, then the stress chemicals do two things that will sabotage you. The stress chemicals get you ready to run from like a tiger, saber-toothed tiger, fight or flight, run. I go, oh, so fear puts the chemistry of run from the tiger. And I go, yeah, and what does that mean? It says, put all of your energy into the arms and legs because you're going to have to run when you're in fear. So the body does what? Remember, the body is using energy all the time for everything, for growing and fixing and maintaining the body, repairing, replacing cells. I say, what if you need all the energy to run? And the answer is the stress hormones shut down everything in the body that is not necessary for running away from the tiger, which means maintenance of the body. You stop maintaining the body because the energy is needed to run. So you don't use it for maintenance. And then here's the second one. The immune system is protection, but it's protection from a threat on the inside. The adrenal system is protection from a threat on the outside. So if, let's say I give you a situation, you have a bacterial infection and you're being chased by a saber-toothed tiger. How would you split the energy? How much energy would you use to fight the infection? How much energy would you use to run away from the tiger? I hope you get the answer. The answer is 100% of the energy goes to run away from the tiger. And I said, well, then what about the immune system, which requires lots of energy? And I go, not when you're running away from a tiger, you don't use it. So stress hormones shut off the immune system. Now, I say, just simply, what is the result of this? I said, in the old days, a long time ago, when you were stressed because you were running away from a saber-toothed tiger, you'd be in stress until you escaped. The moment you escaped, though, no more stress, and you go back to normal life again. So stress was only used as a just a runaway from the tiger, just for a short pulse. But then I look at today's world, and there's stress 24/7, 365. Turn on the news, read the newspaper, look at your paycheck, see the cost of food in the store. Every day it's like, oh, there's so much stress here. And so guess what? The system was originally designed only to run away from a saber-toothed tiger, and now it's on 24/7. The idea was shutting down your immune system and shutting down your growth for a short moment, in a sense, of running away from the tiger is not a problem. But if you continuously suppress the immune system and suppress growth, there's no way out but sickness and illness. And that is why, and here's a fact, 90% of today's doctor visits are really due to stress. We keep blaming the machine. Oh, my heart is attacking me. You know, my parts aren't working right. It's my machine is the problem. And it goes, no. You're a driver of a vehicle. The vehicle is the body, and you're the driver. And if you don't understand how to drive it, you could, you know, your car will end up in the junkyard. How do all the cars end up in the junkyard? And the answer is because the driver's messed up. That's how. And the idea is, you want to stay healthy, then you have to understand how to drive the vehicle. And the most important thing is to know that stress shuts off the maintenance of the vehicle. And stress is the illness. So our 90% of our issues are not because the biology has got a problem with it. As a matter of fact, here's a fact. Less than 1% of disease is based on genetics. That means over 90% of disease is based on lifestyle. And all of a sudden it says, well, why is that important? And the answer is simple. If genetics controls your life, then you're a victim because, as far as you know, you didn't pick the genes and you can't change the genes, and the genes apparently are controlling your life. So I'm a victim. But the new science is called epigenetics. Sounds the same, but it's a revolution. And the revolution is this. When I say genetic control, I'm literally saying control by genes. And that makes us victim, as I said, because we don't control the genes, according to that belief. But the new science is a revolution. It changes that. The new science is called epigenetic control. You say, well, what's epi? I say, epi means above. So when I say epigenetic control, what am I actually saying? I'm saying control above the genes. And now we know that the environment and our perception of the environment are what control the genes. And I say, what's the relevance? Well, then you're not a victim. You're potentially the master of your genetics, because you're the one that is creating the environment or interpreting the environment. You want to change your life, change your environment, or change your interpretation of life, and then you have control. So the new science is control of our biology as masters. The one that almost everybody has been programmed with out there, almost everybody has been programmed with the belief of victim. I'm a victim of, I'm going to get cancer. Angelina Jolie, I'm going to get cancer because my mother had cancer and my sister had cancer, or aunt or whatever. And she says, oh, that's running in the family. It's cancer is genetic. And it turns out, no, it's environment. And you say, what do you mean environment? 50% of the women with the breast cancer gene don't get the cancer. And I say, well, why is that relevant? I say, well, why do you call it a breast cancer gene? Because you say, well, this gene causes cancer. And I go, well, if 50% of the women don't get the cancer, but they have the gene, then the answer is, does the gene control the cancer? And the answer is no, because 50% of the women have a gene and no cancer. It's the environment that influences the cancer, which is your behavior and your responses to the world. That's part of the environment. And therefore, we're beginning to find out, we always blame cancer on the genes. And it turns out, no, up to 90% of cancer now is actually believed to be total lifestyle and environment. And I say, what's the relevance of this new thinking? And the answer is, we are not victims. We are the ones that create the environment and our perceptions. And if we change our perceptions and change our environment, we have absolute control. And therefore, we have to stop seeing ourselves as victims and start to take leadership in our own life and our own health.
That is so inspiring.
Yes, that's a conversation that Lana and I have quite a bit. Lana's a doctor of the mind, obviously, and she deals with that issue with stress and anxiety with her patients quite a bit. And we've had this discussion about, is it genetics or is it, you know, environmental influences? And my book was Illusion of the Body. We talked about this prior to this interview. I learned this about panpsychism being the philosophy that all things have consciousness. Even so, Illusion of the Body is about consciousness of the cells, consciousness of the organs, and how they're all working together, and how our mind and our perceptions and our beliefs, negative and positive, affect our health, our physical health and our emotional health and our mental health and our spiritual well-being. And that was just a revelation that I had early on, being an investigator for 20 years. I just went right into that. So this, yeah. This goes right along with everything that you're talking about, and certainly Lana knows a lot about this as well, deals with it every day, actually.
Absolutely. And if we follow the conventional curriculum, the education, you have to recognize this, and you know, people may not want to hear it, but it's a simple truth. Science is not a free investigation like everybody thinks it is. Science is also a paid-for investigation. Somebody's paying for the experiments. And it turns out that most of the experiments that we are living by are actually paid for by the pharmaceutical companies. And the significance is the data has already been revealed in the British Journal of Medicine that the outcome of any research is predicated on who funds the research. So they looked at research, the same research that was funded by the government in one group, or the same research as funded by pharmaceutical companies in another group. So they're both groups working on the same research, but different funding. And they found that the research, when funded by the pharmaceutical company, came out four times more in the favor of the pharmaceutical interpretation than in the conventional science. And it basically said, yeah, the data is slanted toward who pays for the research. And so we bought in all this data that the drug companies are like making, you know, really great things. And the fact is, the drug company is one of the leading causes of death in the world. Pharmaceutical drugs are much more lethal than illegal drugs by factors of 10 or 100. So, we always talk about, oh, illegal drugs are the big problem. And I go, they're minor. The number of deaths from illegal drugs are minor compared to the drug deaths from the pharmaceutical industry.
I've had criminal defense cases where people have been so addicted to benzodiazepines that they'd actually go into the pharmacies and hold them up to get, just not for the money, but to get the benzodiazepines, because they were coming out of their skin with anxiety from the withdrawals, you know, and then they'd end up in jail, they'd end up in even worse condition.
Well, they found that many of the kids that are involved in school shootings in the United States are kids that are coming off of the psychotropic drugs, like SSRI drugs, like Prozac, or those kind of drugs. And they find out when a person is withdrawing, not by intention, when they're withdrawing, let's say because they can't get the drug, they become suicidal, and their minds are crazed. And then we end up with, you know, a kid going into school and shooting up all these students. Why? Because their psychology has been screwed up by the pharmaceutical company. And we don't want to own credit for that. But the truth is, every study has revealed that these psychotropic drugs are negative in regard to healing people from neurological issues. In fact, the head of the National Institute of Health, neurology, you know, neuroscience department, the head of all that, really just last year written a very big article saying ever since pharmaceutical drugs have been introduced into the psychology realm, the ability of doctors to help patients has gone away. That we were able to help patients before the use of the drugs. But now that the drugs have come in, they're making drug addicts out of people, but they're not helping people. And it's a misleading thing, and it's corporation, and it's money, and it's not for people. People think, oh, the pharmaceutical company is out there to help me. And as we've seen very recently, by the gouging of prices by some of these industries, raising drug prices 5,000 times above the background because they could, not because there was a reason to, just because you could make 5,000 times more money, drug companies started raising prices. And I go, well, what does that all mean? And it says, they don't care about the patient. Drug companies are corporations. They care about the shareholders getting profit. And I say, how do you shareholders get a profit? And the answer is, you charge more for the product than the product is worth. And that's called profit. So I go, well, so you're making massive profit. And I said, where are you making it from? And the drug company said, well, we're making it off these drugs. And I go, wait, these people are sick. They need these drugs. And the idea of compassion, which is what was built into humanity. Human is based, the word human is based on humane, which is based on compassion. And I go, the medical profession has lost its compassion because it's basically there for the money. It's there for the profit. And I go, how do you make a profit? As I said, well, you charge more than the services. And then I go, well, then by definition, that's not compassionate. That's the opposite. The person's already sick, and now you're kicking them while they're down. And so by definition, really, this is true, definition, the pharmaceutical industry is inhumane by definition. Humane means compassionate. Inhumane means the opposite. And the answer is you can raise the price on a drug 5,000 times because you can make the profit because nobody else is selling the drug. It's not humanity. It's inhumane. And that's the pharmaceutical company in a nutshell.
Well, I'll give Lana credit. Lana does the majority of Lana's work is psychotherapy anyhow. So she's certainly going to help people.
Well, you know, I guess I'm standing sort of, you know, smack in the middle of these two, I guess, belief systems, because yes, I believe strongly in psychotherapy, but I guess there's another part of me that does believe strongly and has seen very effective results from pharmaceutical agents. And so it's really hard for me to make a comment. I mean, I've seen patients that have definitely got better with medication. I've seen other patients for whom medication doesn't work and who get side effects. So I guess I have to say that, and I know, I mean, the results of studies very often do depend on who makes them. And I know that there are very clear studies that have shown that the suicide rates have certainly decreased. And I've certainly seen lots of cases of people with depression and anxiety who've immensely helped with medication. I always offer therapy as well. So I can't say that, you know, it's placebo alone, but I do agree that, you know, big pharmaceutical companies have a very, you know, there's much at stake in terms of money and in terms of profit, and I know that they certainly, you know, want to intend to keep it that way. And I know that there's lots of other treatments that have stopped being used because pharmaceutical companies have, you know, basically used their power to stop this.
We that's the unfortunate part. The unfortunate part is we live in a world where you live with a conventional belief built into the fabric of this world. The fabric of our civilization is built on a belief called Darwinian theory of evolution. And Darwinian theory of evolution says it's a struggle to survive and that it's a competition for fitness. And I say, well, what determines fitness? And in our world today, fitness is measured by money. How much money do you have is how fit you are, basically, when it comes down to that. And therefore, we believe in a world based on competition where it's legitimate to take advantage of another person because that just means they're the Darwinian weak link. and I'm stronger. Yeah. And I get this because I'm entitled to it because I'm stronger. And it turns out if Darwinian theory was correct, then that would be a model to live by. But we now know the model is completely wrong. Civilization, evolution is not based on competition. Evolution is based on cooperation. The failure of cooperation in our world today is really what's responsible for all the problems. And so we are living on a philosophy, a philosophy that says it's okay if another person suffers because they're lower on the chain of fitness, and we accept that. So you say, oh, well, you know, 1 million Africans are going to die of starvation, but that's okay because they're not the winners in the Darwinian challenge. And the fact is, the Darwinian challenge is completely inappropriate. In fact, the Darwinian theory is what is driving our civilization to extinction at this moment. Right. At this moment, the way we are living, where we can do whatever the heck we want and we're not really part of nature and that we can use nature any way we want, which is the belief system, has led to the destruction of this web of life. And that today we're facing what scientists refer to as the sixth mass extinction of life on this planet. Five times in the history of this planet, life was thriving and then got wiped out. Now, the previous five are attributed things like comets or asteroids hitting the Earth and upending the environment and wiping out life, blah, 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 blah. Today, science has recognized we are losing species of organisms faster than in the previous mass extinctions. And as a matter of fact, we are losing organisms 1,000 times more than background. There's always losing organisms as species are always dropping out. But today, the rate is 1,000 times background. And the reason is human behavior. So basically it says the way we have not been living in harmony with the planet, harmony with the ecosystem, the environment around us and all the organisms, and understanding the way of living in harmony, the way we are living as humans is the cause of this extinction. And so basically it says you want to stop this extinction, you have to look to humans. Humans have to change their belief system. And the number one belief system that has to drop out is the Darwinian theory that evolution is a competition. For a simple reason, a garden, such as the so-called Garden of Eden, a garden is not a battleground. A garden is a harmony in a community. And the fact is, we are not living in a garden because we no longer have that harmony and we no longer have that community. And as a result, the planet is undergoing this problem right now.
Well, there's a little known law that I came up with called the law of equilibrium, which sort of basically puts down the law of competition. It means keeping everything in balance.
This is what's important in our world today, and the lack of balance. And it's very interesting, you know, because there are still some people here that know how to understand balance. There are people still on this planet, very few, that still understand how to talk with nature, how to read nature, how to understand it so you could work in harmony with nature rather than like our current scientific approach is, well, if it's not doing right, I can change the environment. I could add all these chemicals to the earth and I can change the genes and I can do all that. And it's like, oh my God, you're destroying it because you don't know how it works. And I say, well, who knows? That's the indigenous people. The indigenous people that are still here, whether they're aboriginals in, in Australia, or Native Americans or First Nation people in North America. These are the people, the few that are left, that know how to speak in harmony to the planet. The rest of us have lost the communication skill. And as a result, we are ending up thinking we're making the best out of things and are putting our big hands and monkey wrenches in the machine is actually destroying it. We are in a sixth mass extinction because of our behavior. And if we don't learn how to get back into harmony, well, then it's not very long. It's not long at all. As a matter of fact, the estimate, which they now think is actually longer, it should be shorter. The estimate is 2048, no fish in the ocean. It's like a science fiction story, planet Earth, no life in the ocean. Where the hell is that? What the hell does that mean? It means
aware of that.
Absolutely agree. It's absolutely, I don't know, something has to be done. So,
and oddly enough, I think it was Stanford University that recently came out with the mass extinction report, I believe. And I saw that in the news.
Someone put Obama and Putin on. We have Susan Glynn on hold. Susan was very keen to meet you. She's our co-host. And
yes.
Susan's a very good friend of ours, and she's a healer, energy healer. Susan, are you there? Hello, Susan.
Well, Don has to take her off hold for
oh,
us.
Oh, okay.
That's okay. Don, you can bring Susan in as soon as you get a chance.
Yeah, hi.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Susan.
Oh,
so glad you can join us.
Can you hear me?
Welcome, Universal Soul Love, Susan Glynn.
So you can hear me?
Yes, we can, Susan.
That's fantastic. It's an absolute honor to meet you, Dr. Lipton, and I'm listening carefully to what you say and have been connected to a lot of what you've been saying for a long time, because one of the main tools that I use within my own practice with people is it's because it's very much a positive emphasis from my point of view on what do we do about what you're speaking to. And one of the things that has been a very powerful energy healing tool for me has been de-healing codes, which I think you
yes.
have had connection to earlier on. And
yes.
I have been utilizing that for only 10 and a half years. So in my own life, I have massively changed a lot of things in my own life, my own health. And I brought myself back from a couple of different illnesses with that. But I've also seen enormous amounts of change within that. Would you say that the most useful things for us to do to get back into harmony with the earth and with ourselves and within our own personal communication skills and relationships, that these kinds of energy healing tools, clearing tools, releasing the negative belief patterns and working with those releasings with energy itself is our path back, or have you got a better idea?
Actually, it's really exciting because this path, like the body codes and Psyche and EFT, and I could go on and on and on, which are collectively called energy psychology, represent for me, the clearest, easiest, simplest approach to regaining power over your life, and then in that process, regaining control, put the environment back in order. We must fix ourselves. It's like the old hippie days. They used to say, before you go out and change the world, take care of your own backyard. And I think this really applies right here, is before we go out and want the world to change, if we're not living in harmony with ourselves and we're not living in harmony in our own life and our own world, going out and marching in the streets is not going to help anybody. So these processes that bring up, these energy psychology processes, are a miracle in my sense of, boy, do we need to be able to change fast. And these processes, these modalities offer that opportunity. And indeed, as you have found out, as I have found out, as thousands and thousands of others that I've communicated with over the last 10 years have all found out, once you take back the control of this power over your own life, then and only then do you actually have the power to be healthy and happy and enjoy this planet for what it is, which is heaven on earth. When you really learn to live here, it's like, oh my God, you cannot think or imagine a better place to be in the universe than on this planet. And if you don't see it that way, then that really means there's something in your filters that you're looking at the world and it's distorting it. And it's unfortunate because most of the programming that we have, and we've all been programmed. Our lives have been programmed. 95% of our lives come from the programs that we received in the first 7 years of our life. That's when our mind, the child's brain, for the first 7 years is in like record, and it records hypnotically everybody else's behavior, the mother's behavior, the father's, the family, the community. To become a member of the society, you got to be able to know all the rules. And the only way an infant can learn all the rules is they download them hypnotically. And the fact we've been programmed. And it's interesting because people have been told, I love this, it's like a joke on us, we have been told we have been programmed. for 400 years and nobody paid attention. And I go, the Jesuits have said for 400 years, they knew this, and they said it for 400 years. They said, give me a child until it's seven, and I will show you the man. What they actually were saying is, you give me the first 7 years of a child's education, and I will show you what they will become. In other words, they already knew that the programming you get in the first 7 years is the primary character determinant factor that will determine your life, health, behavior, emotions, everything. And they've been telling us that. Now it's time for us to wake up and say, well, what about that programming? And then I tell you what psychologists will tell us is that 70% or more of the programs we downloaded in the first 7 years were disempowering, self-sabotaging, and limiting. So all of a sudden I say, geez, you didn't get your feet off the ground without first having been disempowered, because you have been programmed to see you're a victim. You're nothing. The only thing you're a victim is of is your program.
And so, as you said, Dr. Lipton, yes. Bruce, hopefully you're going to tell us that we can reprogram ourselves.
Yeah, this must be about self-empowerment.
This would be a crappy program if I didn't. It wasn't able to say that. Here's the problem. Here's the problem. Why is the programming a little difficult? It appears. Why does it appear to be difficult? You ready? And here's the answer.
Yeah.
Okay. There are two minds. We call it the mind. I say, no, there's two, and they work together, but they're two separate things, so they're not the same, and they have different functions, and they learn in different ways, and that's where the problem comes from. I say, well, let's list the two minds. The most recent evolution of the mind is called the conscious mind, which is related to brain tissue right behind your forehead called prefrontal cortex, and this is where you as an entity, an individual, an identity, a spirit, a source, that's where you are. So you're operating like the driving, you got your hands on the wheel in the prefrontal lobe of the brain, that's called conscious mind. That gives you the will to drive the car anywhere you want. The original mind that was there before the conscious mind is called the subconscious mind, and very important because the word sub means below. It's the mind that operates below consciousness. You don't have to think about it, it just operates automatically. So the subconscious mind was there before the conscious mind. And it's more or less stimulus response, input, output, push the button, make a behavior. It's not thinking. And I go, okay, here's the issue. The subconscious mind is programmed for 7 years of how to be a member of a family, how to be a member of a community, 1,000 different rules. And I say, well, how does it get programmed? I say, the subconscious mind is in a state of vibrational frequency. When you put wires on a person's head called EEG, the vibrational frequency of the 7-year-old and younger child, the predominant frequency is called theta. Theta is imagination, but theta is hypnosis. So a 7-year-old, 6-year-old, 5-year-old child is living in the imaginary world and the real world. So, you know, the child's riding a broom and you say, give me the broom. The child will look at you coming from theta, which is imagination mixing with reality. The child says, this is not a broom, this is a horse. To the child, at that moment, while it was riding the broom, it wasn't a broom, it was a horse. That's theta. But theta is also hypnosis. So it says, when your first 7 years, you're getting programs of how to become a member of a community. And if you have bad programs, then you made bad programs in the subconscious mind. And then you go, okay, wait. I don't need the subconscious mind. I'm going to drive with the conscious mind because that's the one that's me. And that says my wishes and my desires. That's what conscious mind is, wishes and desires. I say, what do you want from your life? Conscious mind comes up with the answer. It's creative. So I go, okay, when you're driving the vehicle with conscious mind, you're moving toward wishes and desires. Now here comes the big monkey wrench that the whole thing goes wrong. And that is this. When the conscious mind is thinking, I'll give you an example right now. We'll just try it right now. You know, I'll say, David and Lana, what are you doing on Wednesday at 4 o'clock? If you have an answer, you're thinking about it. I said, where'd you get the answer from? You had to go inside your head. I said, wait a minute. If you went inside to go into your head to think, then that moment, the conscious mind, by definition, does not have the hands on the wheel anymore. Because when you're thinking, you let go. And then the subconscious is the default. The subconscious knows how to walk, how to drive the car, how to do your job. It knows anything you've practiced over and over again. It knows how to do it, so you don't have to think about it. So here's the point. This is the problem. This is the crux of the world's issue in this one statement. You ready? Science has found that we are thinking 95% of the day. Then by definition, our life behavior programs are not being run by the conscious mind, wishes and desires. Our life is running 95% of the time according to the programs that we received in the first 7 years, the downloads about how to live, how to use your behavior. The behavior we're exercising 95% of the time is not ours, but we created it. It's behavior that we got from other people downloading it. That's where the church's story, give me the child for the first 7 years, I'll show you the man. They knew, if I give you that education, that is in your subconscious mind, you will manifest the subconscious mind program as your life. So, okay, now I'm turning around. We're looking at you, me, all of us are listening or looking in the mirror, and we're saying, wait, I have a conscious mind with wishes and desires that the things I want to have in my life, and I have a subconscious mind as programmed by other people, but I'm only living 5% from my conscious mind and 95% from the program. So you say, oh, and I want to help everybody very quickly. And the idea is, I said, since your subconscious mind is running your life 95% of the time, I say, well, what are the programs in your subconscious mind? Because you got them when you were 1 year old, when you were 2 years old. You even got them in the last trimester of pregnancy. Your conscious mind has no idea what those programs are. I say, well, how do I know the programs in my subconscious mind? So let me help right away. And it goes like this. 95% of your life is coming from the subconscious. Your life is a printout of your subconscious program. Point. Those things that come easily into your life come easily because you have programs to let them in. And here's the stickler. Anything you work hard at, anything you put effort into, anything you struggle over to bring into your life, to make your life conform to that, anything you sweat over, the first question is, why are you working so hard? And the answer is inevitably, your subconscious mind does not have a program to support that, so you are trying to override your program. So you want to know what your programs are? Look at your life. Accept the things that you like that come in easily as programs that you have that offer what you want. But also accept this. Anything that you want but you can't get to, then you have to work hard and struggle, represents programs that do not support you that you already have. And then you say, okay, I want to change some of these programs. I want more love. I want to have a better health. I want to have better relationships. Say, oh, you got to change the program if you're having trouble with those. And then you say, well, how do I change the program? And I say, this is where the problem comes in. It was thought originally the two minds were connected. So the conscious creative mind could come up with a new idea. It was anticipated then the subconscious mind should follow right along with it. Okay, I got a new idea. Aha, a new way of life. I go, but my life is still the same. So what happened? The conscious mind learns in a different way than the subconscious mind. The conscious mind is creative. The conscious mind can learn from reading a self-help book. The conscious mind can learn from going to a lecture or listening to this audio program, for example. And then I could also say that I'm holding on for a second as a rescue helicopter is flying directly over my head. Hold on, it's rescuing somebody. Okay, helicopter. Okay, so here's...
If it's not a drone?
Yeah. Well, Leonard and I are both hypnotists, so we do a lot of... We explore consciousness studies, so I do understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, so basically, the subconscious mind learns only in three... There are four fundamental ways the subconscious mind learns. One of them you have no control over. One way is a shock to the system. A major shock to the system, like getting a diagnosis of a terminal disease, can shock the system and cause you to rewrite your subconscious program at that moment of shock. But that you can't control that. It's not very easy. So I say, what are the normal ways that the subconscious learns? And here are three ways. The first way it learned for the first 7 years is to be in hypnosis, to be in theta or low alpha brain activity. And that way you bypass consciousness when you're in hypnosis and you can download a program straight into the subconscious mind. You can do it every evening as you go to bed, as you're going from a conscious awake state, which is a high vibration, and going into sleep, which is delta, a low vibration, you pass through theta every night. So just as you're falling asleep, your mind happens to be in theta. And so if you have earphones on with a message going as you're going asleep, the message will be playing while you're in theta. The message bypasses consciousness and goes into the subconscious, and that's how you can reprogram it yourself. Self-hypnosis. Mm-hmm. Number two, mm-hmm. after age 7, the subconscious learns in a different manner. First 7 years is brain frequency, theta, hypnosis. After 7, you're in conscious state. I say, well, how do you learn then? I say, repetition. How'd you learn anything? You practiced something. You repeated it over and over again until you got it right. Repetition is how you make a habit. So you want a new habit, you have to exercise a new repetition. And you have to repeat it and repeat it. Even if it doesn't seem it's working, you just repeat it and it becomes a habit. That's how you learn naturally after age 7. You want to learn to drive a car? You get in the car and you practice. And the more you practice, the better you become. That's the way it goes, okay? And then I'll say, yes, let me just give the third one and we'll finish.
Yeah, sure.
The third one is what we mentioned earlier is the new modality called energy psychology, which engages something like a super learning response in the brain. It opens up a window of super learning so you can download a new belief in 5 or 10 minutes. And this is a godsend because we're living in a world on the edge. We don't have a lot of time to change. We have to really become proactive and change our behaviors now. And so fortunately, these new psychology modalities have come in, and they offer an opportunity for super learning technology, which allows you to download a new program in minutes. And those are the three fundamental ways. And of course, the latter for me is very exciting because habit and self-hypnosis are time-consuming. And the energy modalities are relatively fast. They can change in minutes. So all three of those. But the idea of talking to yourself, which most people have done forever, is saying, I don't like this behavior. I want to change it. I want this behavior, not that behavior. And they talk to themselves, and then they get frustrated because it doesn't seem to change. And I have to say, because there's a joke. The joke is, well, the conscious mind has you in it. Who are you talking to in the subconscious mind? Like, is there an entity in the subconscious mind? The answer is no, it's a machine. So when you're talking to yourself, there's nobody to listen in the subconscious mind. And that's where the frustration comes in, because the frustration is I keep talking to myself and the program doesn't change. And I go, because there's nobody in the subconscious mind to listen to you. And therefore, you're talking to nothing. And that gets very frustrating because all that talk doesn't change anything. So unless you're talking in a habit form and you repeat this talk every day as a habit, then you're making a habit. But if it's just a talking or getting mad at yourself, it rarely has any effect on the program in the subconscious.
So that's interesting.
Yes.
Susan Glenn, she's a healing codes trainer and
yes.
Talks about how changing the vibration is much faster than going into meditation, spending a lot of time
yes.
talking to your higher self or whatever, which is how I've done it in the past,
yes.
you know, but
that's very hard. I mean, you know, as I said, if you repeat it a lot, then you're actually repetition and making habit. But the reality is it's a very slow process. And the easiest way to learn is to get your mind into super learning, getting your right and left hemisphere into sync. They call it hemi-sync. And that mm-hmm. offers an opportunity like a window, which you can download new ideas like almost instantaneously, within minutes, boom, and walk away with a different set of belief as a result of that.
Yeah, we've had Nancy
exactly.
from the Harlan
Institute.
Exactly,
my experience over the last 20 years. My
20,
if I
yeah.
might just put a little point in there. On my experience over the last 20 years with doing energy has been a growing letting go of this hard attitude and the belief, because it feels to me that, and tell me what you think, Bruce, the holding on to hard attitude, belief that life has to be hard, means that we are then attracted to processes that need a lot of control, processes that need to be hard work. And I have found that the more I have been able to just let the energy clean out my negative, deep programming, then it has been easier. It has been a more loving experience. It has been easier to look at a person I don't even know, or even more difficult, a person I don't necessarily didn't particularly like, and now find that there are things about that person that I can love. And it has dramatically changed my relationships and the way in which I relate to everything and everyone. particularly nature, because I actually live in the Australian bush. And,
yes.
Have a little wallaby who wanders into my kitchen and we share our food. That kind of allowingness of human to come into a wild creature's life, because the creature picks me to come in, showed me that my own vibration had dramatically changed because I changed my thinking. And I think now all I need to keep doing is keep going along that alignment. What do you feel about that and the hard attitude attracting hard processes?
Well, this is the most exciting stuff you've already experienced, and this is why it's so important for people like yourself to go out and help others experience that. You can change all these things, not by physically changing the body, not by like putting drugs and chemicals in there, but as you said, by changing the energy field. And it's interesting because we're moving away from a physical mechanical biology, which is the emphasis of the pharmaceutical company, and moving into a quantum mechanical expression of the body. The body is not just physical, the body is energy. And it's much more effective to work with the energy than it is to work with the physical chemistry. So we're moving in that direction. And it's very important because, as you said, once you start to learn to live in harmony, the world is not me and that, me against that. That I am the world and the world around me is me. And once you start to see that harmony, it's interesting because as people have been watching, you know, now on the internet, there's so many videos of what? Wild animals playing with each other, different species, and even humans dealing with lions and things like that. Why? If the mindset is right, you can live in harmony with them. If the mindset is fear, for example, you approach a lion with fear, to the lion, you're food. And the idea was, What's the difference is what you're broadcasting, because animals, it's interesting, humans listen to language as our guide. You tell me something, I listen to it, I remember it, I record it, I write it, I hear it, I listen to language. Every organism, including us, but we don't emphasize it, every organism on this planet, the primary language is energy, vibration, good vibes, bad vibes. That's what organisms read. They read, is the vibration around them in harmony with them, good vibes? Or is the vibration around them canceling their own energy, bad vibes? They respond to the vibration. They don't know the words. That's ours. We make words. But humans could feel good vibes and bad vibes. And the issue is, if we would put that before the words, when you meet with somebody and you can ascertain the vibes, you can get a true reading of who that person is, because a bad person can make all the most beautiful words you have ever heard sound like the hero.
Yes.
And they could be the most evil person in the world. But if you could read the vibes,
yes,
you would already read that
that's
vibration
right.
does not support you. And like a lower animal, animals read the vibes. And a friend of mine, Alberto Villaldo, who's become a shaman, he was a biochemist and became a shaman once he lived among the Amazonian Indians. He recalls when he was first getting involved, when you walk into the jungle, as you walk into the jungle, it's noisy as anything. They're all the animals, insects, birds, everything's making noises. But when he would walk into the jungle, as soon as he started to walk in the jungle, it got dead silent. And it was dead silent, could never figure it out. But when he learned how to walk like the natives, when they walk into the jungle, the noise and the animals still continue because the jungle sees them as part of the whole. But when he walked into the jungle with his Western attitude and his Western belief system, he was a foreigner, an alien to the environment, and all the animals and all the insects and all the bugs just shut up. And it's like, this is not harmony in our world when that guy walked in with his Western mind. And so it basically says,
he was emitting a foreign vibration to them.
Exactly. And if you're not sending out a harmony vibration, they will not respond to you at all. They'll just keep away. And if you send out harmony, like he learned how to do, I am part of this natural world and I am living in your natural world, the insects, bugs, birds, whatever, accepted that individual as part of their community. And so the idea is, look what Western mindset has done. The Western person walks into the jungle and everything gets quiet. And that says, a Westerner with their belief system is not living in harmony with the planet. That's the simplest, like the simplest assay. How are we doing? Walk into the jungle. If the animals shut up, you're not doing good.
Yes. That exactly has been a perfect measurement for me, because at this point in time, science just has not got anything that can measure what an amazing lot of changes I have actually experienced in my own life. And I see it in my clients. My clients come back to me and they just say, I'm getting a completely different readout from all of the different people around me. And I say to them, do you notice that it's less about what your brain is saying to you and so much more about you are becoming a walking sonar system of receptivity, sensitivity and input, and you can design that so that if you're getting too much overload, you can actually ask it to be still aware and sensing, and you can also ask it to step back, please, so that I'm not having disturbance or pain or hurt that somebody next to me is feeling rain on me and that I have to feel their pain. No, 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 please push that back, I say to them, and ask that to be in your observing, but you're slightly detached and you're able to be observing and sensing rather than at the mercy of. So again, it's that victim thing stepped in, and there are a lot of people who are now walking sonar systems, but they have this enormous difficulty because they're getting too much sensory input. And so a lot of my work is to encourage people to take their head off, listen to their senses, and then speak to that energy and ask it to back off and just not be quite such an overload, so they observe what's going on in their life. And for my own life, watching the creatures and having a bird land on my back and stomp up and down my back and coo at me is just the joy of my day, because then, and these things happen to me regularly because that has been my measurement pre science finding a machine or inventing a machine to measure the changes that we are made. So we're out in the stratosphere of weird doing all of this stuff, and it is the experiences of life that seem to be giving us our measurement of how much change we are achieving. Does that sound right for you?
Absolutely. It's what it's all about. And the idea is that we can see the readout by what's happening around us. Is your life in harmony? Then just look at your life. If it's not in harmony, it's not because the world is against you. It's because whatever you're broadcasting unconsciously from your program is creating a disharmony. And this changes the world from I'm a victim to, if you really begin to know this, you begin to see, but I can manipulate this. I can change this. I can create which vibrations I want, which ones I don't want. And all of a sudden, we go from victim to master. And the first thing to understand is the kind of work you're doing is you have to remember that your thoughts are not contained in your head. They're broadcast out into the field. You are a tuning fork. And if your vibration is not in harmony, then the only things that are going to move in your world are things that are resonating with not in harmony, which are things that you don't want. And when you start to resonate in harmony, it changes.
Bruce, Dr. Lipton, something that I wanted to ask you about was you talk about reprogramming the individual, but of course we are all living in one big community, and while you said that each human is like a community of cells, we are in fact like a community of little minds in one big population on Earth.
Yeah, right.
So I'm just wondering whether a lot of our life depends on other people and their programming, which can get in the way of your programming. So I'm wondering whether you have anything to say about perhaps the ability to reprogram individuals around you, or in fact the whole world. Perhaps we could reprogram the whole world to stop going mad and kill off the Earth.
Like the Super Consciousness Project.
Yes.
We only have about 60 seconds left for the show. I've been informed by the producer, so...
Okay, so what's really interesting about this is, yes, people are ready to listen. If they start to listen, it's up to them to make the changes. But I cannot change anybody. You cannot change anybody. We have to recognize the only one that we can change is ourselves. But the whole idea is this. If you start to live in harmony and you start to be healthy and happy and life is wonderful for you, guess what? Everyone around you is going to want to know, what is it that you are doing? Because I want what you have. As soon as they ask that question, they are now ready to learn. And when they're ready to learn, they're the ones that can learn. But I can't push learning on the people that are not ready to learn. They're not ready. They're not. They're the ones that are going to learn, not me. And so But what we're finding is we are indeed facing a crisis of unbelievable proportions that requires us for the first time, civilization. As you said, civilization is a living organism. Each one of us humans is a cell in the body of something bigger. And so the evolution is not the evolution of the human. We already did that. It's the evolution of humanity. That is what's evolving, a super organism made out of 7 billion cells, us, learning to work in harmony in the same way that 50 trillion cells in your body can work in harmony if you're having a healthy, happy life. You got 50 trillion citizens living in happiness. We can do that with 7 billion, but we have to become a one thing. And that's what the world is coming together now. The young people are part of the new evolution because the internet has no national borders or boundaries to it. The internet is global. And the civilization of young people growing up with the internet, by definition, will be a global civilization, and that's where the change will come from at a global level.
I like the I like the serenity prayer myself. Works well for me, and just knowing that you have to be joyful to be a joy to others, so that, like Susan says, we need to be a beacon of light to the world, because everything starts with a relationship with ourselves.
Exactly.
And it makes me a love activist. That's what I call myself now. A love activist.
Love absolutely.
My goal.
Now, we're going to have to finish up. Dr. Lipton, Bruce, could you, your website?
It's very simple. BruceLipton.com. And on there are lots of under resources, all kinds of articles and videos and interviews and all kinds of information freely available about the things we're talking about. So it's a great resource.
Fantastic. And we know you've written a number of books. We focused more or less on the first one. But look, thank you so much for agreeing to be on our show. It's been really intense, amazing, so inspiring.
Yes, it has been intense. It's been very informative. And we thank you so much for being on Universal Soul Love with us.
We feel reprogrammed.
Well, I just want to thank you. Definitely, I'm very honored to speak to you and your community, because each one of us is a piece, and the more pieces that come together, the faster the evolution. So thank you for creating a community where new thought could be introduced.
Thank you too.
Okay, and thank you, Susan Glenn, and thank you, Lana, for being on the show with us, everyone, and thank you for everyone for listening, and we will see you next time on Universal Soul Love.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.